Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
They're back on Bourbon Street, baby. Parting it up. Not going to let terror attacks deter them. Back to the Sugar Bowl. Oh, yeah. That's how we roll. That's how we do it in America. But let's not let this be an opportunity for more surveillance. Let's not let this become another opportunity for them to gain more power over us. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210. Happy New Year on X at Rich Zeoli. Hope you had a great New Year. Hope you had a great Christmas and great Hanukkah, whatever. Just hope you had fun. And this is certainly not what we want to be talking about as we begin the year. But I'm here today. Tomorrow I'm off. Not because it's Friday, just because Senator-elect Dave McCormick invited me to join him in Washington for his swearing-in. So I'm looking forward to that tomorrow, and then I'll be back on Monday for a full week. But it was very important to come back on the air today, obviously in light of what happened. But I just have a lot of questions. I'm sure you do as well. And reflexively, immediately, people who love power love to use opportunities like this, never let a good crisis go to waste, to talk about how they can have more of it over us. Now, look, I think a big reason why these events happen is because we live in a very big country. We have freedom, but also because the FBI has their priorities all wrong, as I mentioned. You know, looking at moms and school board meetings, for example, focusing on that, how you have two military members who could become radicalized, how you could have two military members who could both want to commit acts of terrorism, and this doesn't fall on anybody's radar, but somebody praying in Latin at a mass does fall on the FBI's radar, should tell you a lot about the priorities of what they've been looking at. And that's because priorities are driven largely by people with political agendas. So people with political agendas in Washington drive the priorities of the agents on the ground, the agents in the field. So the people in Washington were not thinking like, oh, we got to turn the Office of Civil Rights into a weaponized agency that will go after moms at school board meetings who Merrick Garland doesn't like and the little troll under the bridge Randy Weingarten doesn't like. And, people praying outside of abortion clinics. If the bureaucrats said no to that stuff and said, we want you to look at terrorists, potential terrorists, and they said, okay, great. Well, we got this guy who was in the Capitol on January the 6th. Nope, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people that might actually want to commit violence against their fellow Americans in the name of some cause that would be terror related. Okay? Because just buying guns, just buying bullets, just buying fishing gear does not make you a terrorist. There has to be political motivations behind it, religious motivations behind it, whatever it is. So look after those guys and stop turning around and telling us every 2 minutes that the biggest threat we have to worry about, domestic violent extremists with MAGA hats on. That's what I mean about priorities and priorities being in the wrong direction. The other problem, too, is that you have too many people in Washington who will use an opportunity like this to say, well, we need more power over you, more ability to spy on you, more ability to know exactly what you're doing at all times. So here's the district attorney, Jason Williams, who is one of those guys who's gotten a lot of money from George Soros, just like our own Larry Krasner here in Philadelphia. And he's calling for this kind of surveillance in the aftermath of this. Cut number two.
Things are going to have to change just after 9/11. I remember a time when I could run from my car to the gate to catch a flight. After 9/11, we realized we need to do things very, very differently so that we can all arrive at our destination safely. I think you're going to see a lot of things change in the city of New Orleans. And actually, I think you're going to see a lot of things change in this country in terms of how we handle large-scale events, where there is pedestrian access and where vehicles are allowed. I think you're going to see things change in terms of the level of surveillance that we have in this country. We pushed back against some of that. But when you look at places like the UK and other European places where CCTV is very commonplace and used proactively so that it can look for signs or indications of an attack, I think you're going to start seeing those things in this city because I'm going to be pushing for them. And you're going to probably see them in a lot of other places that are destination cities like the city of New Orleans.
I don't really want that. I don't know about you, but I don't have an appetite for more surveillance and more cameras on all of my movements. And I don't know how a camera in public would have stopped this from happening. I know that if they had had the proper deterrence in place, it may have stopped the truck bomb. It may have stopped the truck, but I don't know how a camera would have. Now, here's another thing, too, about priorities, right? So the Daily Wire has a story about the priorities of the local law enforcement in New Orleans. New Orleans FBI office and even the local police department, chock full of DEI nonsense. New Orleans Police Department, the city's FBI field office, are staunch advocates for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And those agencies are investigating the terrorist attack that killed 15 people Wednesday morning. The New Orleans FBI office has aggressively promoted diversity initiatives on social media, especially in its recruitment efforts. A press release from May 20th, 2024 stated the Bureau would hold a diversity agent recruitment event to aid in their search for applicants with diverse backgrounds, skills, opinions, and perspectives. The division's social media accounts are rife with advertisements for diversity recruitment, with one post encouraging minorities and women who qualify to attend the event. Another post from June 2024 says the agency is committed to fostering diversity and inclusion by hiring special agents from a variety of unexpected backgrounds. Unexpected backgrounds? I don't know what that means exactly. A July 2021 post captioned "The Value of Diversity Celebrates Near and Middle East Heritage Month." Now, do we need the FBI New Orleans office tweeting about Near and Middle East Heritage Month and the value of diversity? The answer is no. This is kind of like the Progressive commercial about becoming your parents. Do we need the FBI tweeting about diversity for Middle Eastern and Near Eastern Heritage Month? The value of diversity? The answer is no. Do something better with your time. But then, of course, if they weren't doing that, they probably would be profiling people for shopping at Cabela's. Because it's just their priorities are just wrong. Now, the New Orleans Police Department, the superintendent, Ann Kirkpatrick, which if you watched her yesterday at the press conference, the first thing that you thought is, oh, my gosh, she's older than Biden. Really, she looks older than Biden. She sounds older than Biden, too. She serves as an instructor for the FBI's Law Enforcement Executive Association's Leadership Training Program, where she instructs officers on subjects including but not limited to bias and diversity, emotional intelligence, and leading generations. She also served as the chief of the department of the Oakland Police Department, where she implemented equity-based decision making. The city's police commission voted unanimously to fire Kirkpatrick without cause in 2020 after 3 years leading the department, according to the NBC Bay Area report. So she gets hired in New Orleans, and she's 175 years old and not exactly intimidating either. So, with that and the priorities here, you got to wonder to yourself, what's going on? Now, Tom Homan, who served as the who will be the border czar under President Trump, was on Fox News earlier today. He thinks these two plots are probably connected to something bigger. He said it's just what his gut is telling him. But I don't know. I just believe Tom Homan more than I believe the people in charge. For some reason, call me crazy, we've just been so gaslit and lied by these people all these years. I have a feeling that Tom Homan probably has a better sense of what's happening and what's going on than Mayorkas or anybody else. So when Tom Homan speaks, we should take a listen. This is what he said earlier today to Sandra Smith on Fox News. Take a listen.
I think the further the investigation goes, I think they are going to find a connection between the two incidents. But look, they're both suicide events. The man in New Orleans certainly had no plans of going home for getting out and trading gunfire with law enforcement. So I think both these men realize they weren't going home after this event. But the threats aren't over. I've been on this network for 4 years talking about the threats coming across our southern border. And, you know, we got a record number of known gotaways. Over 2 million people enter this country. We don't know who they are or where they came from, or what the purpose to come to this country. They weren't vetted, they weren't screened, they weren't fingerprinted. We don't know who they are. And since the Border Patrol and CBP arrested over 300, well over 300 people on terrorist watch list, how many of that 2.2 million who escaped apprehension, who escaped vetting, who escaped fingerprinting, came from a country sponsoring terror? Even Christopher Wray, the director of FBI, said numerous times under testimony in front of Congress that this is the biggest national security vulnerability he's seen. I agree with him. So we're not out of the woods. This country's in grave danger. We need to secure that border. And despite what's happened the last 2 days in Las Vegas and in New Orleans, this administration is not stopping. They're still releasing thousands of people every week through the CBP One app, the CHMV program, and Border Patrol continues to release people in this country without proper vetting. This is not a good thing, and I can't wait for the new administration to take power and secure this border and protect our national security.
I just don't know why. Why you would not want to immediately, I mean, instead of having more surveillance on American citizens, why not just secure the border? I mean, I got to tell you, we just flew back. Bridget and I went down to Cancun, and the kids were with Mama Zioli and Papa Zioli and my sister, and it was great. We have not done that in forever. I mean, really, it's been years since the two of us got to go away for that length of time together, just the two of us. And it was exactly what we needed, and vitamin D, and it was fantastic. But first of all, getting into Mexico, we fly into the airport in Cancun, and I waited, I don't know, a half hour at passport control. And there's all these signs there about how you can't bring this into the country, you can't bring that into the country. They're very strict on all this stuff. And they ask you how long you're staying, where are you going to be? They write all this stuff down as you hand the woman your passport and say, hola, you know, buenos dias, senora. She goes, well, how long are you going to be in Cancun? We're going to be there until New Year's Eve. Where are you staying? Blah, blah, blah. And she writes it all down. Phone number. Get all the contact information. Okay. Then flying back. And by the way, there's military at the airport. And you walk through the airport. And I'm sure you've been. I mean, everybody's been to Cancun. Everybody's been to that part of the, whether it's the Riviera Maya or Tulum or any of those other places that you get to from that airport. And the military's there and they ask you questions like, you bringing any tobacco in? That was their big thing. Are you bringing any tobacco in? So if you are, you got to pay a tax over there. And I thought about bringing Cubans back. But of course, we're not allowed to do that anymore since President Trump reinstated the ban on that in 2020. And I'm a rule follower, so I didn't do it. Also, I don't want to. This government will confiscate property for every reason. So I don't want to, you know. Anyway, I got, obviously, if there's anybody who would get stopped, it's this guy. So flying back into the country and then going through passport control and everything, I just kept thinking about all the controls that are in place at airports. And you hear the district attorney there talk about after 9/11 and everything with the TSA and everything with all. But we have a border that's completely wide open. So, I mean, nobody's asking you questions if you just come over the border and nobody asks you where you're staying and nobody wants to know. When you fly back in, you hand your passport over to our guys and they go, how long were you in Mexico for? Did you buy any booze? Did you bring back any fruits, any vegetables, anything like that? I can't think of how many people are coming over the border with fruits and vegetables that could disrupt the ecosystem. So the fact that we don't have that being done, and you already have a district attorney saying, well, we probably need more surveillance on Americans. That's the answer. No, it's not. I mean, it's not the answer. But it's the easy excuse for people that love the surveillance state. It's taking an incident like this and to turn around and say, let's expand it, shall we? Let's expand it. And the fact that the local guys are saying we refuse to rule anything in or out. Listen to that sheriff or that cop in Las Vegas. It's very obvious to me. Very obvious. Those guys are not buying what the FBI is selling. I think a lot of local law enforcement at this point is reluctant because of the bureaucracy to believe them at this point. Because clearly they're calling the shots here for reasons. Oh, also in the show, I got to let you know, Biden on his way out the door is trying to ban oil and natural gas drilling before he leaves office. And a judge has come in and said, stop the sale of the border wall. Stop it already. So here's the clip of them talking about the suspect here and the guy in New Orleans. And how this guy had all these videos and he was radicalized and everything else. He intended to kill his family, but was concerned the media attention wouldn't be focused on the war between believers and non-believers. Cut one.
The FBI team and our law enforcement partners here are also reviewing hundreds of hours of surveillance and other video from both the French Quarter and other locations. As for a timeline, at this point, investigators believe Jabbar picked up the rented F-150 in Houston, Texas on December 30th. He then drove from Houston to New Orleans on the evening of the 31st, and he posted several videos to an online platform proclaiming his support for ISIS. There were five videos posted on Jabbar's Facebook account, which are time-stamped beginning at 1:29 a.m. and the last at 3:02 a.m. In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote. Additionally, he stated he had joined ISIS before this summer. He also provided a will and testament.
All right, he joined ISIS this summer. Like I said, if this guy had spoken at a school board meeting, they would have definitely got him. If he had just gone shopping at Cabela's, they would have got the guy. He joined ISIS this summer, but was not on anybody's radar. This is what I mean about the priorities being wrong of this administration and this government. He didn't just join ISIS on Tuesday. He joined ISIS over the summer and was putting videos out there and was talking about terrorism. And then all of this took planning. And it's able to happen. Given all the surveillance, given all of the ways that Americans are profiled every day. So doesn't it make you think that their priorities are just completely and utterly off here? Certainly makes me think that. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. And Biden talked about the guy's social media posts indicating ISIS ties. So we're about to hear them say that they need more power over all of us, that clearly the Patriot Act doesn't go far enough, that clearly that this act doesn't go far enough. We don't have enough cameras. We don't have enough warrantless spying. It's not that. It's the priorities. They have all the tools in the world. We've surrendered the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment. We've given them everything at this point, everything. But it's priorities. Because if you're too busy looking at some dude in a MAGA hat or some mom at a school board meeting or some guy praying in Latin, you are not focused on guys like this. Priorities are the issue. It's not lack of resources. It's where they're looking. So how many times have they been focused on stopping another January the 6th versus stopping an Islamic terror attack on U.S. soil? Here's Biden, cut number three.
Here's what we know so far. The FBI has reported to me the killer was an American citizen, born in Texas. He served in the United States Army on active duty for many years. He also served in the Army Reserve until a few years ago. The FBI also reported to me that mere hours before the attack, he posted videos on social media indicating that he was inspired by ISIS, expressing a desire to kill, The ISIS flag was found in his vehicle, which he rented to conduct this attack. Possible explosives were found in the vehicle as well, and more explosives were found nearby. The situation is very fluid. And the investigation has a preliminary stage. And the fact is that right now, excuse me. There you go. The law enforcement and intelligence community are continuing to look for any connections, associations, or co-conspirators. We have nothing additional to report at this time. The investigation is continuing to be active, and no one should jump to conclusions.
It's almost like Biden's happy that the guy's an American citizen, right? It's almost like he's happy that the guy's an American citizen and served in the military. It's like, whew, I don't have to worry about that. At least he checks some boxes that we've been telling you about are the big problems. All right, 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Speaking of parents at school board meetings, we're going to talk to parents defending education in a little bit on the show today. We got a busy show for you, but there is some other breaking news outside of the terrorist stuff, and that is that Biden is now moving to block offshore oil and natural gas drilling before Trump arrives. That is an article from Bloomberg that just came out a short time ago, and he's trying to do this on his way out the door. So we'll tell you about that. I'll also tell you, too, how the judge came in and said, hey, stop trying to sell off pieces of the border wall. All right. Stop it already. Enough. Yeah. January 20th cannot come soon enough. But the real thing here is I'm glad that people like Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard are getting in there. I really am, because they're people who are also being profiled by this government. I mean, think about it. Tulsi Gabbard is on the Quiet Skies program. Here's a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army Reserve. They're more focused on her than they are on guys like this. Kash Patel is another one. There's been so many stories about how they were profiling Kash Patel all these years, too. How many other people in Trump's world we find out after January 20th, assuming that they are not on a shredding spree right now as we speak, how many more people are we going to find out, you think, in Trump's orbit who have been profiled by this government? Who have been spied on, who have been profiled in some way, shape, or form between now and when he leaves office. And I wonder if the truth will come out. I really do. Because I would like to know, and I think everybody would like to know, is it just anybody who is associated with Trump that they have labeled a would-be domestic violent extremist, would-be domestic terrorist? They've been so focused, laser-focused on January 6th. So focused on it. And then, obviously, when something like this happens, you got to say to yourself, priorities have been wrong. But how deep does the extent of the government spying on people like Tulsi Gabbard go? See, that's why I'm not worried about people like Tulsi Gabbard and Kash Patel getting in there, because they understand how the system is abused for political purposes. So I'm not worried. I'm not losing sleep over them turning around and saying, we need more. We need more power. We need more surveillance. Like that district attorney in New Orleans talks about. Now, you see, when you're on the other end of it, when you're on the receiving end of that, when you've seen how the government can weaponize those tools that we've given them to, quote unquote, keep us safe, you don't want any more of it. You want less, not more. All right. 855-839-1210 is the number if you'd like to weigh in today. And Matt DeSantis, are you just not answering calls? Is that what it is when people are calling up? Or
no,
are you just not screening
calls? If you call in, you'll get to hear my voice. It's a great way to start
the new
year.
Oh, look at you in studio. Look at that. There's Matt DeSantis.
It's not long term. It's only for today and tomorrow. Then I'll be remote again. But if you want to hear my voice, you want to start your new year out hot, call in.
All right. Happy New Year, Matt DeSantis. And we got the Justin cam going. But you're going to have to turn the Kale and Company banner, since this is not Kale and Company.
Yeah, I don't know why they leave that up there. Every day they do it.
Well, just block it.
We've got limited space. There's
just turn around. Here, just no. Go back where you were. He was blocking it fine. Just block it with your body. There. Block it with your body.
Perfect.
Right there. Don't sit. Perfect. Perfect.
I'll just be like this for the next 3 hours.
That's it. Just sit like that. Then we can't see anything. All it says is talk radio 1210 WPHD. Some hand exercise. Show us your tattoo while you're there. Show us the tattoo on the arm, on the Justin cam.
Yeah, there you go. There's two of them, actually.
See that?
There you go. You got one.
Look at that.
You got the other one. You
know, what's the symbolism of those tats?
I play the bass guitar.
Careful, we're seeing a K. Just watch your head.
Yeah.
Don't move your head too far to the right. The K just came out.
But no, I play the bass guitar, and one of my inspirations was Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers. So I have it on my slapping hand that I slap the bass with as like a reminder. Mm. And the other one's just a rune of protection. The ancient
Very
rune
nice.
Of protection.
Very nice. We'll talk about Matt DeSantis' slapping hand because of his fake girlfriend, but that'll be another segment for the show a little bit later, all right?
No, we won't be discussing
that. But with
that
a fake
all.
Girlfriend, you need to have a hand for that purpose. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Coming up, education. Let's talk about it. As the government has had their priorities all wrong, spying on moms at school board meetings. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
What do you do? So, we'll come back to all the events in New Orleans. I will tell you, the Sugar Bowl is underway. They started with a moment of silence for all the victims in New Orleans, so that's good. And the game is afoot, which is excellent. But I want to welcome the show, back to the show, actually. She's been on with me before. Nicole Neely is president of Parents Defending Education. And Parents Defending Education released a new report, which we're going to talk about. It's amazing how much the Department of Justice spent. And again, as I talk about the lack of priorities here, or the wrong priorities by the Department of Justice, going after parents like Nicole, who spoke out at school board meetings all these years. Nicole, thanks for joining us here in Philadelphia. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us about the report that Parents Defending Education put together and what the Department of Justice has been spending and what they've been spending it on.
Sure. So we identified over the past 4 years, $100 million in grants that went up through the Department of Justice's STOP program. And what this program is it's intended to help increase school safety by implementing solutions that improve school climate. And surprise, surprise, this money was hijacked by DEI activists in the bureaucracy. And the money was, in fact, not used to improve school safety, but was used on pet projects, on things like anti-racism that didn't actually keep kids safe, which is really an insult to injury.
Yeah, and obviously, we're always worried about kids being safe at school, and no doubt about that. But the kind of safety that they think about from the perspective of the Department of Justice is kids being triggered by having the wrong pronoun or not being able to use the bathroom that they want to use, regardless of their biological sex.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it talks about using restorative practices, social emotional learning, prioritizing certain demographic groups over others, things like that, that are really, you know, when you think about, as you said, protecting kids, keeping them safe in school, something that is top of mind for all parents. This is not it. You know, sending a kid to the principal's office and singing Kumbaya is not the same as hardening a school building.
What does restorative justice mean? Because I have no understanding of that topic, and I hear it all the time lately. It's become a new buzzword. Is it restorative or is it restorative justice? What's the proper way to say it?
Gosh, I don't know. I'm from Chicago. I probably pronounce it wrong.
Like, is it like restoration where you're – yeah.
No. So they're intended to break what's called the school to prison pipeline, which means that we don't actually want to punish students. We don't want them to feel bad. We don't want them to be stigmatized. And so what we do is, yeah, we bring the alleged accuser together with the alleged perpetrator, and then they have to forgive each other. You know, they hug. But does that actually serve as a disincentive? I mean, you and I have both been through school. And so if bullies aren't, you know, if they don't face punishment, if they're not sent to detention or anything because they don't want them to hurt their feelings, do they ever learn a lesson? And do they stop doing what they, you know, were doing? Absolutely not. They know that they can get away with murder. And sadly, that's, I think, why we have had a lot of incidents of violent students, not only disrupting class, hurting teachers, preventing their peers from learning. And so it might sound good on paper, but scaling this in big school systems where there are real major problems is absolutely not feasible.
Tell us what the Minnesota Department of Education did with the $2 million that they received from the Department of Justice.
Oh, gosh, there's so many of them. Yeah, the Minnesota Department of Education received about $2 million to create safe learning environments where practices of anti-racism and anti-oppression are embedded. I mean, again, this is all stuff where if you're approving a grant proposal, you know, it checks all the boxes, it has all the big words, but what the heck does that mean? And does making kids just have a better self-esteem, is that keeping children safe in school? I would argue no.
Not only that, Nicole, but I would also say that a lot of the other nonsense that this money went for, hiring consultants. OK, so there's a whole industry of people that get rich off of this stuff, and they push the narrative that America is systemically racist, and they push the narrative that all we want to do in America is just hate each other. So many of the consultants who were hired promoted diversity concepts such as critical race theory, critical gender theory, and queer theory. None of that has to do with education, by the way. None of that. None of that has to do with keeping kids actually physically safe in a building. None of that. And this is the Department of Justice money. This is why people talk about wanting to shut down the Department of Education, because I'm assuming that a lot of these grants were facilitated vis-a-vis the DOJ, probably with the help of the Department of Education as well.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. I mean, you think about, why are people losing faith in governments? Because they see their tax dollars being diverted to fund crap like this. At a time when inflation is going through the roof. I mean, it's really insulting, because we know it's not keeping kids safer. It's not helping our children learn. But it is enriching, as you alluded to, the diversity industrial complex. that has been making money hand over fist for the past 4 years under the Biden administration. And so, I mean, I think January 20th can't come fast enough because I cannot wait for Doge to start kicking butt and taking names.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a mess, right? And there's an article that I saw you link to on your Twitter. And by the way, you can follow Nicole at Nicole Neely on X. It was a Daily Wire article how the Biden administration blew over $1 billion on diversity, equity, and inclusion in red states like South Carolina, which received a staggering $13.6 million over 3 years. So you talk about all the spending that's being done, and then you think about what the administration's trying to do with things like Title IX, for example. And you have another link there, how Trump can undo Biden's Title IX rules that expanded gender definition in schools. So as a mom with Parents Defending Education, what would you like to see President Trump do on day one regarding this issue of Title IX?
Well, I think, you know, there's so much litigation that's going on right now. Obviously, they're going to start to do the rulemaking. But this is something that we have been talking to people on the Hill. There has to be a congressional fix for this as well. We can't keep doing this whiplash every 4 years once there's a change of administration. Title IX was written in 1972 with a clear, you know, it's only 37 words, right. But there has to be more legislative language added to this to really scaffold this, define what a man and a woman are, what, you know, what belongs where, who belongs where. And I think that'll go a long way into clearing this up so that we don't have to keep switching back and forth. Because, I mean, after 4 years of an administration that could not define what a woman is, I mean, who can imagine what we would get under President Tim Walz or whomever might come next?
Now, with regards to the money that was spent here by the Department of Justice, and we all remember years ago during COVID or right after COVID when the Department of Justice, Merrick Garland, came out and said, hey, you moms and dads at school board meetings, you might be a domestic violent extremist and the FBI might be watching you. I mean, parents have been public enemy number one from this administration for a long time. And a big part of that is because we've been speaking out against the indoctrination. In fact, I like how in Parents Defending Education, you have an indoctrination map, which is very, very helpful. But it is the indoctrination that they are trying to push. And a lot of this money, a lot of this grant money went towards that indoctrination. And for that reason, we've been speaking out against it. And they've said, hey, you're the real terrorists here in this country. And that's been so frustrating, especially when you watch the events in New Orleans and the events in Las Vegas, and you think, man, their priorities have been so out of whack all these years.
Absolutely. It's scary when you think, you know, people who love their children were told, sit down, shut up. We have this. There are kids. Stop trying to, you know, cling to your guns and your God and your values. We know how to prepare them for society, and it doesn't include you. And parents said over my dead body. And that really obviously scared the Biden administration. Hence why we had, you know, the labeling of parents, why we've had people targeted. They want to chill us. But, you know, fortunately, so many thousands of parents across the country have said, you know what? I'm going to take it because I'm the only person standing between me, you, my children, and you.
Say there's a parent who doesn't want their kids learning about gender theory or queer theory because they just feel like the only theory they should be dealing with are fractions and, you know, actual educational theory. And they say, I want to send my kids to a different school. How do you think the prospects of school choice are going to be under this administration, Nicole?
I think they're going to be a lot greater. It's something that Secretary Designate Linda McMahon has spoken out in support of. It's something that President Trump has been supportive of. And I think it's something that, I mean, you look at the polling about this, there is broad bipartisan support for this. It's what families want, because under COVID, people saw what their children were learning or frankly weren't learning, and they were angry. They were disappointed. Parents who were spending thousands of dollars to send their kids to private schools found out that in some cases, places like Choate or, you know, crazy ones in Manhattan were even worse than what some people were seeing in public schools. And so I think there's a real desire for parents to be able to find a school that has values that fit with what they have at home. And in some cases, that's homeschooling. In some cases, that's parochial school. And in some cases, it's sticking with the public school. But the public schools need to know that they no longer have a monopoly on our children, and they cannot get away with murder behind closed doors.
As far as school safety goes, actual school safety, not this nonsense, but real school safety, what would you guys like to see? I mean, for me personally, I like the idea of having school resource officers who are armed. I don't need them there busting kids for having food fights and that sort of thing. Those should be dealt with by educators. But I like the idea of somebody with a gun being in that building, being able to protect my children should some psychopath walk through the door.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we saw after George Floyd, a lot of school districts start to pull out school resource officers, again, alluding to this whole, you know, we don't want the school to prison pipeline. We don't want kids to feel bad. We don't want to discipline kids. And then we have seen over the past 2 or 3 years, schools starting to quietly put them back in, largely based on parents' demands. And so, again, I think this is the kind of thing where school choice will and should come into play. What I might want as a parent might be different than what you want, or, you know, vice versa. And so people should be allowed to find a school. We've seen, sadly, in the wake of October 7th, lots of Jewish day schools have tons of armed security guards. That's something that the families want. It's something that the schools have provided. And so it's really responding to that market. People put their children into, and sometimes not even great charter schools because they have security. They don't want their kids to go through metal detectors in a public school and be subject to violence. And so it is definitely a decision that parents are making affirmative decisions for their children's safety on. And I think we'll continue to see going forward.
Love it. Great stuff. Nicole Neely, president of Parents Defending Education. Follow Nicole on X at Nicole Neely and follow Defending Education, too, because they do great work. And absolutely, they're in the fight. We got to be in the fight right there with them helping out. Nicole, thanks for joining us here in Philadelphia. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
And as we continue along here, I should also mention to you, you know, Donald Trump reiterated over the weekend that he's not going to put up with any of this gender nonsense in our bathrooms and our locker rooms and on our athletic teams when it comes to college. So that was good. He doubled down on that again over the holiday break, which makes me as a parent very, very happy because I'm sick of the indoctrination. I really am. But it is going to be a big fight coming up in New Jersey next year. Remember, there's two states with governor's races, and Virginia's one of them. And that's what elevated Glenn Youngkin to be able to win in Virginia 4 years ago. Well, now in New Jersey and Virginia, both of these issues are going to be front and center again, no doubt about it. So think about that as we try to flip New Jersey red and to keep the governor's office in Virginia red as well. I think these issues are going to be in the forefront of all this. And I still maintain and believe that one of the big sleeper issues was the transgender issue when it came to sports teams and bathrooms and locker rooms. Just a lot of parents don't want to talk about it, but they were very, very acutely aware of where the left was going with this. And then the other issue, which I think drove a lot of parents, is the Make America Healthy Again movement. Because I'm telling you, as a parent, a lot of the problem comes down to your kids go to school. You hope the cafeteria has healthy food for them. You find that it's all junk. So I think a lot of this drove parents. I really, really do. All right, 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Very excited that our buddy Minnie from the YouTube chat calling us all the way from Texas. This is a big deal. Minnie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year and howdy. You and I haven't spoken for about 4 years in terms of my calling.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah, because the last time I talked to you was right before COVID.
Were you afraid we'd get it through the phone lines? Is that why you didn't call?
Oh, my God. Don't make me laugh too hard. I'm gonna break your cans from laughing so hard. Too loud.
I like your cans, Minnie. By the way, I think you do great work on social media with all of your memes that you create for us. But I do have issue with the fact that you are the de facto president and the only member of the Matt DeSantis fan club.
Well, you know, somebody had to do it, so I stepped up to the plate, and I heard Linda Kearns trying to take my spot. I told Dom that a few weeks ago. I'm like, No. that she can be vice president, or she could be number two fan, but I'm number one fan.
Now, did you get a tax write-off? Is that why you did this? Were you trying to do it right before the IRS deadline? So you could deduct
That's
all of that
idea.
From the Matt DeSantis, like the human fund?
Oh, my God. See, that's when I first called you. I was talking about that I was about to go to Austin, and then there are a bunch of libs, my lib family in Austin, and I was going to tell them I got a lot of problems with you people. that's the first time I called you. Yeah, I'm going to look that up. You know, I mean, maybe I could, you know, if I can make some money off that, too.
No, I mean, nobody's buying that, Minnie, but you should take a huge loss on it. That could help. Huge loss.
It's not on purpose. I mean, I have called. I've spoken to Dom a few times. I even spoke to Tony Bruno not long ago, and your guest host out of Dallas, Chris Kroc, spoke with him on Thanksgiving. But, like I said, it's not on purpose. I just, and you see that I'm still following y'all, because when I first called you, that's when you were on super early in the morning because I'm an hour behind y'all. And I was still getting up to listen to y'all because I heard you fill in for the great one. And you really cracked me up. And I heard you say, you know, where your show was. I'm like, I'm starting to listen to that guy. And then that I started listening. That's, you know, that's before poor Rush Limbaugh passed away. So it was you and Dom and then Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and Levin. And I would listen to all of y'all. Y'all got us through a lot of hard times with COVID.
Well, I'm honored to hear that, Minnie. You are a wonderful addition to the show. We love you in the YouTube chat. We love all your social media memes. How can people follow you, Minnie?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I'm at Princess and Weiss on because the other name is too hard to say. It's German. It's Princess and Schweinitzen, which means Princess Snow White, because my original account was Princess Snow White. Nivius means Snow White, but then they took it away.
Matt DeSantis' original name was also Princess Snow White. I don't know, is that part of the reason why you guys get along so well?
You're too hard on Matt.
He loves it.
What? Well, no, he doesn't. Maybe. He doesn't love it.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I'm over here and I follow y'all more than I follow the local. So a lot of times I know more, like WrestleMania not long ago, Seth Rollins came in a Mummers outfit and I turned to my husband, oh my gosh, it's the Mummers, you know, and he's like, yeah, you know that because you follow all those people over there. I'm like, yeah, well.
I love it.
Those are
it's
my
great.
Peeps, you know. Y'all are my entertainment. Y'all are the best out there, in my opinion. I mean, seriously, you know.
Wow. I'm impressed. I appreciate you saying that. And by the way, while you were saying that, Minnie, if you notice, Matt DeSantis on the camera moved the angle so that his face was covered. He doesn't want to be on camera.
My face isn't covered.
But Justin, look at the Justin cam. Can we get a close-up of his Justin? Now, that is a good-looking man right there. Am I right, Minnie? Look at him. Man's a star.
Yeah, I like his seafoam hoodie and his skull cap. He's got it on. He's got it going on.
Thank you, Minnie.
I think what we're trying to say, Minnie, is if you do want a hobby, maybe it's the Justin fan club versus the Matt DeSantis fan club.
No, the Matt DeSantis fan club, look, what we lack in quantity, we make up for in quality. I can't afford to lose any members. I don't have anyone to lose.
Well, I could start one for Justin, and we could have another chapter. We could have the Justin Big Guy Fan Club, because that's what he calls himself on Twitter, and we can have Matt's Fan Club.
I love it. Well, listen, we love you, Minnie. Thanks for everything you're doing. And Kirk, thanks for engaging Minnie the way you do on behalf of all of us, since I forget to check the YouTube chat. So we're grateful for you, my friend. Have a happy new year.
You have a happy new year. God bless you.
God bless you, Minnie. Wow, that's awesome. That's great. So nice of her to call. I love it. All the way from Texas. Absolutely great stuff. Thank you, Minnie. That was great. Made my day. Made my year, actually, to hear that. We are better than the lesser Texas hosts. I love that.
That was the first time I ever got to chat with Minnie over the phone. I've spoken with her, obviously, on social media. But, yeah, what a treat. What a way to start 2025.
Right? And her accent is amazing. Howdy. Love that.
It is great. We don't have.
Oh, you know, she should have said, y'all come back now you're here.
Oh, damn. That would have been awesome. Yeah.
All right. Next time she calls, we'll get her.
That's an excuse to have her call in again.
Yeah. And what we got to think about, Justin, is what other Texas style things do we want Minnie to say while we have her on the phone? And we could record some of them and, you know, just play them throughout the course of the show.
That's actually a good idea.
Yeah. Right. Like, what other Texas-style phrases, like, you know, everything's bigger in Texas, stuff like that?
It's more of a Southern thing, but we can get her to do a bless your heart.
Oh, bless your heart. I love that. That's great. And I wanted to say, you are Italian, because I think it's how they all say it down there. You are Italian. All right, we got a lot more to come, and we got some breaking news around NOLA and Vegas, and is there a connection? What are we learning? So don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
You know what burns me? I'll tell you. It's that in fiscal year 2024, 155 people on the terror watch list came over the southern border. That we know of. That's the ones that we know of. They're not turned away. That's just, they just count them. It's like, oh, welcome to America. You're coming in illegally. We're going to do a little clicker here. And are you? Oh, you're on the Terror watch list. Okay, just checking the boxes. Go ahead. Enjoy your stay. So far, fiscal year 2025, 16 already since October. So, again, as I hear these officials talking about wanting more surveillance on all of us and wanting more tools and needing more tools, it's, first of all, if every tool you need, you just don't use them the right way, and you don't use them against the people that you're supposed to use them on, you use them against American citizens, and that's the problem. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, okay, well, these two people were American citizens. First of all, we don't know that for sure, that they were not in some way on the radar of the government at some point. And if they weren't, why not? If there's an American citizen who's getting radicalized by ISIS as far back as the summer, and we don't know that, but we do know about a dude praying outside Planned Parenthood. See what I mean about priorities? See what I mean about the terms of where this Department of Justice is looking? So I think they have the resources. It's just a matter of how they use them. All right, 30 minutes of nonstop talk coming up straight ahead for you, including updates on both incidents in NOLA and Vegas. Are they connected? We'll find out. Plus, will Mike Johnson make it as Speaker? We'll tell you about the Republican opposition and where President Trump stands and his support for Mike Johnson. Don't go away.